Harper Audio presents Cinderella Ate My Daughter, Dispatches from the Front Lines of the New Girly Girl Culture by Peggy Orenstein. This is the author. Chapter 1. Why I Hoped for a Boy. Here is my dirty little secret. As a journalist, I have spent nearly 2 decades writing about girls, thinking about girls, talking about how girls should be raised. Yet when I finally got pregnant myself, I was terrified at the thought of having a daughter. While my friends, especially those who'd already had sons, braced themselves against disappointment should the delivery room doc announce, "It's a boy," I felt like the perpetual backseat driver who freezes when handed the wheel. I was supposed to be an expert on girls' behavior. I had spouted off about it everywhere, from the New York Times to the Los Angeles Times, from the Today Show to Fox TV. I had been on NPR repeatedly. And that was the problem. What if, after all that, I was not up to the challenge myself? What if I couldn't raise the ideal daughter? With a boy, I figured, I would be off the hook. And truly, I thought having a son was a done deal. A few years before my daughter was born, I had read about some British guy who discovered that 2/3 of couples in which the husband was 5 or more years older than the wife had a boy as their first child. Bingo. My husband Stephen is nearly a decade older than I am, so clearly I was covered. Then I saw the incontrovertible proof on the sonogram, or what they said was incontrovertible proof. To me, it looked indistinguishable from, say, a nose. And I suddenly realized I had wanted a girl, desperately, passionately, all along. I had just been afraid to admit it. But I still fretted over how I would raise her, what kind of role model I would be, whether I would take my own smugly written advice on the complexities surrounding girls' beauty, body image, education, achievement. Would I embrace frilly dresses or ban Barbies, push soccer cleats or tutus? Shopping for her layette, I grumbled over the relentless color coding of babies. Who cared whether the crib sheets were pink or Glen plaid? During those months, I must have started a million sentences with, "My daughter will never." And then I became a mother. Daisy was, of course, the most beautiful baby ever. If you don't believe me, ask my husband. I was committed to raising her without a sense of limits. I wanted her to believe neither that some behavior or toy or profession was not for her sex, nor that it was mandatory for her sex. I wanted her to be able to pick and choose the pieces of her identity freely. That was supposed to be the prerogative, the privilege of her generation. For a while, it looked as if I were succeeding. On her first day of preschool, at age 2, she wore her favorite outfit, her engineers, a pair of pinstriped overalls, and proudly toted her Thomas the Tank Engine lunchbox. I complained to anyone who would listen about the short-sightedness of the Learning Curve Company, which pictured only boys on its Thomas packaging and had made Lady, its shiny mauve girl engine, smaller than the rest. The other females among Sodar's rolling stock were passenger cars, named Annie, Clarabel, Henrietta, and yes, Daisy. The nerve. Really, though, my bitching was a form of bragging. My daughter had transcended typecasting. Oh, how the mighty fall. All it took was one boy who, while whizzing past her on the playground, yelled, "Girls don't like trains," and Thomas was shoved to the bottom of the toy chest. Within a month, Daisy threw a tantrum when I tried to wrestle her into pants. As if by osmosis, she had learned the names and gown colors of every Disney princess. I didn't even know what a Disney princess was. She gazed longingly into the tulle-draped windows of the local toy stores and for her 3rd birthday begged for a real princess dress with matching plastic high heels. Meanwhile, one of her classmates, the one with 2 mommies, showed up to school every single day dressed in a Cinderella gown with a bridal veil. What was going on here? My fellow mothers, women who once swore they would never be dependent on a man, smiled indulgently at daughters who warbled, "So this is love," or insisted on being addressed as Snow White. The supermarket checkout clerk invariably greeted Daisy with, "Hi, princess." The waitress at our local breakfast joint, A hipster with a pierced tongue and a skull tattooed on her neck called Daisy's funny face pancakes her princess meal. The nice lady at Long's Drugs offered us a free balloon, then said, "I bet I know your favorite color," and handed Daisy a pink one rather than letting her choose for herself. Then, shortly after Daisy's third birthday, our high-priced pediatric dentist, the one whose practice was tricked out with comic books, DVDs, and arcade games, pointed to the exam chair and asked, "Would you like to sit in my special princess throne so I can sparkle your teeth?" "Oh, for God's sake," I snapped. "Do you have a princess drill, too?" She looked at me as if I were the wicked stepmother. But honestly, since when did every little girl become a princess? It wasn't like this when I was a kid, and I was born back when feminism was still a mere twinkle in our mother's eyes.